Live
and local.
Across the city.
And South Cambridgeshire.
This is Cambridge Breakfast.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
I'm really delighted to have as my guest this morning Steve Mallon. Steve had a successful corporate career for 30 years in international chartered surveying and fund management, but sadly experienced a personal tragedy when he lost his 18-year-old son, Edward, to suicide in 2015. And he's passionate about preventing others from going through that dreadful experience. Thank you very much for joining us today, Steve.
Good morning.
Good morning. Steve, since losing Edward, you have done some incredible work in campaigning for better mental health care and also to make sure that people have a greater understanding of suicide. You're heavily involved in a number of charities and alliances focused on suicide prevention, and you're the chairman of the Mind... Is it pronounced Minded or Mind Trust?
The Minded Trust, yes.
Minded Trust. Now, that's a charity specifically founded in memory of your son, Edward, and it focuses on providing support to other charities. Tell us about that.
Well, obviously, it was an appalling tragedy when I lost my son six or 7 years ago now. And there was an enormous response from our community. Edward was born and raised in the Cambridge area. He was a student at Hills Road at the time of his death. And there was an overwhelming response from Cambridge and South Cambridgeshire, to his death.
Yeah.
And it seemed appropriate to try and do something to help him and his generation and make a legacy for him, essentially. So we created the Minded Trust, which is a local charity, which is orientated towards helping people in the school system and in the education system and so on. In addition to that, of course, I've also expanded my work very much into a much larger national agenda as well.
You were described by the former Health Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, as the country's most formidable campaigner on suicide prevention. Do you feel there's still a lot of work to be done in improving suicide prevention?
Yes, I do. That being said, I think actually we've come a long way in recent years as a society, since Edward died actually in the past 6 or 7 years, whereby the stigma associated with mental illness is starting to be destroyed. We are obviously as a society placing increasing emphasis on our mental and psychological well-being as much as our physical well-being. The pandemic has obviously highlighted many of these issues, and in that sense, we have probably come further in recent years than we have in the past 2, 3, 4, 5 decades.
Yeah.
That being said, of course, mental health services are the poor relative of the health system at the moment. Those stigmas and biases that we see in society are very deeply ingrained, and it does take a while to change social values, to change the nature of conversation. So I would say that we've come a long way since the death of my son, but it's from a very low base, which means we've still got a very long way to go.
I think you're absolutely right. I know that my daughter is 21 now, and she will talk about mental health and mental health with her friends quite openly. When I was that age, I think it was something that you were quite embarrassed about if you felt that you were unable to cope. So I think you're absolutely, especially amongst youngsters, I think they're very open now about talking about the fact they're struggling, and I think that's a really, really good thing.
Oh, absolutely it is. I mean, it's encapsulated, I think, in the phrase that it's okay not to be okay, which is something that we hear a great deal of. And as someone of my profile in this area, I'm contacted almost every other day by other families who've experienced similar losses and so on. And in so many instances, there is a lot of silent pain. There are a lot of individuals, particularly young people, who are suffering in silence.
Yeah.
And if there was one message we would want to put out there is that don't suffer in silence. That stigma is going away. It is okay not to be okay. Reach out for help. There is help available, and it's okay to talk.
Yeah.
And many lives would have been saved if that had been the case.
Absolutely. Do you think, I was curious about this when I was reading about you, do you think that your work in the corporate world has given you that kind of drive and contacts, actually, that background just to get things done?
Well, yes. I mean, the simple truth of the matter is, without sounding melodramatic, is that I stood in front of my son's coffin at his funeral in front of a packed congregation those years ago, and I made him a public promise, and the promise was quite simply that I would investigate his untimely death and, where appropriate, seek reform and change on his behalf. Mm. So amongst the sort of the whirlwind and all the change that I've been associated with, in actual point of fact, I'm just a father honouring a promise to his departed son. And with that kind of motivation, together with the fact that I'm benefit and I'm lucky and fortunate enough to have a good education and a strong corporate career, you know, I have skills, I have abilities, and I've made a promise to my boy. I don't intend to let him down twice, and I've obviously come quite a long way. The other thing to note, of course, is that there are many, many other families out there that have experienced similar losses to my own, and there are many other families that are afraid that they might do. So in that sense, because of those skills and because of that promise, I stand shoulder to shoulder with all of those families that have experienced this terrible trauma and all of those that are experiencing difficulty at the moment. And in that sense, I would like to think of myself as first amongst equals on behalf of our generation and society as a whole.
Yes, there's nobody understands this better than you, really. Absolutely. Recently, though, you've been awarded an honorary doctorate in health science for services to mental health and suicide prevention. That was from Anglia Ruskin University. How did that feel? That's a really good honour, isn't it? It's lovely.
Yes, I mean, it is obviously a great honour. And I suppose the poignancy of it was exaggerated by the fact that it wasn't expected. It was a wonderful surprise. I mean, inevitably in these sorts of situations, there's a feeling of pleasure and humility at the same time. But of course, there's also a sort of a bittersweet tinge to these things. But what I said to the assembled audience, which was the student body at the Cambridge Corn Exchange, in a very large event and lots of razzmatazz, and it was very positive. But what I said is that out of dark can come light, out of adversity can come success, and if we look after ourselves and look after each other, there's no reason why we can't go on and prosper in life. Mm-hmm. So yes, of course it was a great honour, it's a wonderful thing, but of course in that sense I dedicate it immediately and entirely to my son's legacy, because without him I simply wouldn't be here, and I simply wouldn't have been on that stage to accept that honour. It's the very least my son would have expected of me, it's the very least he deserves, and it's also the very least that I can do for his generation.
As well as MindEd, you're also the co-founder of the Zero Suicide Alliance, Steve. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yes, well, this obviously comes out of my intention to really seek rapid transformation in the health system. If you were to invent a system that was impervious to change and only slow to change, you would invent the NHS, which is, I think, the fifth largest employer in the world. And it is also, at the same time, incredibly disaggregated and fragmented in terms of its management. And the decentralisation that we saw as a result of the Andrew Lansley reforms, who was also, of course, the MP for South Cambridgeshire at the time, mm-hmm. means that when you pull levers in Westminster now, there isn't much on the end of it anymore, so that trusts and CCGs have a lot of autonomy. So how do you change a very large, very complex organisation that has a lot of autonomous units in it? Basically what I've done is, together with others, is create the Zero Suicide Alliance with some very experienced professionals, and the purpose of that is to exchange best practice and generate new innovations and research in respect of mental health and also suicide, without necessarily having to go through Westminster, because lots of parts of the country do things well, and if we did everything that we do well everywhere, mm-hmm. we would automatically raise the game, and that's quite a cost-effective and rapid solution. So the Zero Suicide Alliance now has a membership base of around 700 organisations. About half of that membership is actually comprised of the NHS itself. In addition to that, we have 2,500 individual members, which are largely comprised of families who've been impacted by suicide, like myself. And we have also managed to persuade the government to provide sustainable funding for this programme. I would direct people to have a look at the Zero Suicide Alliance website, because there are training modules on there that are designed for public consumption, so that we can all learn a little bit more about mental illness, all know how to have those difficult conversations when we're worried about somebody, and also the very difficult conversations around the issue of suicide. And to date, over the past 3 years, actually, we've managed to get 1.8 million people trained in regard of suicide prevention via the Zero Suicide Alliance. So that's obviously a significant movement and something I'm quite proud of.
Yes, and so you should be. That's an amazing achievement. Steve Mullen, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Congratulations on the honorary degree to you and to Edward as well. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much too.
We're live and local.
Cambridge 105 Radio.